America's the greatest country in the world. San Diego's America's finest city. Thanks for being here. On the required reading list for the Mike Slater Show are two books by our next guest. I have not read his newest book, which we're going to talk about today, but I'm sure it will end up on this list as well. So the two books that are on there are the, it's called Free Market Revolution, How Ayn Rand's Ideas Can End Big Government. And then the second one is Equal is Unfair, America's Misguided Fight Against Income Inequality. We put both of those on our Twitter. You go to Slater Radio, click the link, and buy both of those books and prepare for his most recent one, In Pursuit of Wealth, The Moral Case for Finance. Yaron Brook from the Ayn Rand Center. Yaron, how are you, sir?
Hey, Mike. I'm doing well. How about you?
Excellent to hear your voice. Excellent to talk to you. And I got to tell you, really happy for you about your new show on the Blaze Radio every Sunday at 11 o'clock. Really, really grateful you're doing that show. How's it been going so far?
I'm enjoying it. I'm having fun. So, you know, we'll see where this takes me. But it's a great platform. It's a great group of people over there. And so far, so good.
Good. We'll keep it up. I'm loving what I'm hearing so far, obviously. I want to get to the book here. But first, may I ask you about Charlottesville and your thoughts on the reaction to it? I'm intentionally leaving that open-ended. You can take it anywhere you want. Good luck.
Well, I mean, I think almost all the responses to it have been terrible and have been bad. From, I think the media has shown itself to be this bastion of leftism that will justify anything the left will do. And the president of the United States has shown himself to either be an idiot or to be just completely blind to what is going on around him. Either way, I can't recall somebody being as irresponsible and just as terrible in terms of their reaction as the president was, particularly 3 days later in that press conference he did, or those off-the-cuff remarks that he did, where he kind of said, well, on the Friday night, there were some good people marching around carrying torches, yelling, we're going to take the country back from Jews and things like that, blood and soil. I mean, no good person walks into a crowd with Nazi banners and chants with them. I mean, give me a break. So, and then, of course, so you've got the left doing everything they can to defend Antifa, the anti-fascist group, and the violence they've inflicted, to the point where the New York Times wrote an article saying, Antifa killed fewer people than the right. So therefore, they're not morally equivalent. Well, wait a minute. They killed people. Last I looked, murder's murder. You don't start counting up. The serial killer that killed 10 people is more evil than the serial killer killed 6 people. I mean, they're both evil. And to that kind of trying to justify the left, and they were, Antifa only is there because the right has gotten out of control. To the right, trying to, represented by Donald Trump, trying to, whitewash what was clearly a Nazi KKK white nationalist rally, which should have been condemned from beginning to end. And why they were even allowed to rally, and why they were allowed to rally with bats. So then there's a whole question of the police and rallies. And anyway, the whole thing is just such
a disaster. The whole thing's a disaster. So you mentioned freedom of speech, right? So you speak on college campuses all the time. You have for a long time. Yeah. What's been your experience? And then how have you seen the students who aren't burning down buildings around you, right? How have you seen them change how they listen to you and how they react to you?
Well, I mean, I have to say that I've had violent protests at my talks for 15 years. So I haven't seen it getting worse for me. And I remember doing events with Daniel Pipes and Wafa Sultan, two very, very brave people who are standing up to kind of the whole issue of Islam and after 9/11 and really taking a courageous stand. And I remember the death threats that they got, the demonstrations. They didn't quite get as violent as, let's say, Berkeley and what was it, the one, Mulberry, where Charles Murray was. Mm-hmm. But they were pretty spooky. I mean, walking in and out of those places, we had, the other thing, we always had security. We always had lots of cops around us, and because of that, I never really felt threatened. Things seem to be, not in my talks, but they seem to be worse for people like Ben Shapiro and Milo. But also, look, Milo's to some extent, I mean, he's got to write the speech, but he is asking for it, right? I mean, he's a publicity hawk.
He loves it.
So he's trying to create a riot, right? Yeah. I'm actually trying to create a dialogue, and I still get protesters, but I'm at least trying to get to create open minds. So, yeah, I mean, the students today are far, you know, there's a certain element within them, and I don't want to generalize, because most students, 80, I even say 90% of students are fine. They're there to study. They've got open minds. They're reachable. You know, many of them are like at Berkeley, right? Most of the students at Berkeley are there to study. They're getting engineering degrees, and they don't care about this stuff. Yeah. But you've got this small minority that is much more militant and unfortunately completely closed-minded. They are not interested in facts. They're not interested in the truth. If you say anything that deviates from what they believe is acceptable, which I do a lot, you're automatically a racist and a fascist. There's no middle ground. There's no discussion. That never used to happen. It never used to go so quickly to you're a racist, you're a fascist. And so I think in that sense, it's much worse. But so this fringe has become much more radicalized, much more closed-minded, and much more open to violence than I think they were in the past.
Totally agree. What do we do with that point? The fact that it seems like more people are not interested in truth at all, right? And maybe you can explain the history of this ideology that there is no such thing as truth, which is obviously the opposite of objectivism, which is all about truth. But give us the root of that, because I see it all over the place. I mean, we could talk about transgenderism. I mean, I see it socially, economically. I see it all over. So can you speak to that?
It's everywhere. And look, and it's on the right and on the left. And it's really, I mean, Trump came in the post-truth era. And Trump, you know, there was a lot on the right that was about false news and about putting out their false stories in order to promote their ideas. So I think it's on both sides. I think it's a general deterioration on our educational system. I think it has its roots, and I don't want to do a philosophy lesson here, but it has its roots going back in German philosophy, going back to the 19th century, to Kant and Hegel and Schopenhauer and Karl Marx, and really a disregard for the truth. And in modern times, it's gotten particularly bad with the postmodernists, who basically out and out say, there's no such thing as truth, there's no such thing as fact. Reality doesn't really exist. You make it up in your own mind. The mind of a white person, they're the most racist people in the world, because they think if you're white, you interpret reality different than if you're black or Asian, and if you're transgender and black, or if you're transgender and white. I mean, every one of these little categories has their own way of interpreting reality, and reality doesn't really exist. It's not real. So it's not like some kind of referent that we can all have a discussion and therefore agree upon. And that's why white males need to just shut up. They can't talk, because nothing they say is relevant for somebody who is black and transgender, because there is no referent that we can both point at and agree on. So there's never going to be agreement. So it's all about power. And since white males have had power throughout history, now their power needs to be suppressed in favor of, you know, the black transgenders. It's not a caricature. This is real. And I'm not claiming every transgender person believes this or any black person believes this, but there is this postmodern belief, and it's called intersectionality. That's the modern, nonsense word that they've adopted, for this ideology. But the fundamental core of the ideology is there's no such thing as truth. We basically are making up reality as we go along, and how we make up reality is completely dictated by our genetic makeup, and that at the end of the day, the only thing that matters in life is power, and it's in the minorities or these groups of so-called oppressed people have to rise up and use power against the oppressors. So it's all power play, and the only direction this can go in, because there's no reality, there's no truth, there's no referent, the only way in order to attain power is through violence. because they can't argue with me. They can't say, hey, Yaron, you're wrong. Here are the facts. And maybe I am wrong, right? Because there are no facts. So the only thing they can tell me is, Yaron, you need to shut up because you're white and male, and we need to oppress you, and we'll do that by use of force. That's the only mechanism left for them in the world out there today.
Wow. So we just did a whole segment earlier about, you know, in law school, they teach you to try to formulate the argument of the person you disagree with, right? And
yes,
if you can form it, then et cetera. I can't even fathom not understanding truth, right? That's the most basic of all things. We try to find it, but they say it doesn't exist. Like, how do they justify that? What are they thinking when they say there's no such thing as truth? What's the point of that?
Well, I mean, think about it this way. There's clearly something out there, right? But, you know, because, and this is Kant's argument going way back, but each one of us has a different mind. It's not obvious that there's something out there. They start with, all we can really know is the fact that we exist. It's the fact that we are here because we feel it, right? So it's feeling-based. We don't know what's out there is really out there. We clearly, two people looking at the same thing see different things and describe it and disagree about it. So maybe that thing isn't really there. Maybe it's all just in our minds. I mean, I'm struggling here, Mike. You can tell. So it's everything. Remember, I don't know if you took a philosophy class, but you know Descartes, the famous philosopher way back. His opening line in one of his famous books is, "I think, therefore I am." So the beginning is consciousness. The beginning is thought, not the real world, but what's inside of you. That's a very dangerous beginning point. And of course, the moderns, say, "I feel, therefore I am." So the primacy of emotion, that's how they experience things. So reason and reality are out. All that really exists is my emotional states, because that's what I experience day to day. I know I feel sad or I feel happy. And that's why you can't offend them, because you're attacking the core of what they are, which is their emotions.
So what is objectivism?
Well, objectivism says the world is really out there. It's independent of your consciousness. It's independent of any consciousness, right? So we're not religious. We believe that reality is what it is. It's always been there. It functions by the laws of nature. We have a consciousness. We have reason that can grasp through science, through knowledge, through just observation, can grasp the world out there, can integrate it and achieve truth, can discover what's really there. And, you know, and beyond that, only individuals have reason. Only individuals can think. Only individuals can eat. Only individuals can use their mind. So you are an individual entity, and morality should be about how do you as an individual human being make the best of your life? How do you live the best life that you can live? In other words, how do you use your mind? How do you use reason to achieve the best life possible for you on this earth? And that's what morality should be about. And the only political system that leaves us free to do that, to pursue our values, to strive towards attaining happiness and success in our own lives, is capitalism, is the American system at its founding. It's the system of individual rights. It's a system that protects our freedom to pursue the rational values we need in order to be successful in life.
Which is the perfect segue into the book. Yaron, can you stick around for another segment and we'll talk about the book?
Absolutely. Happy to.
Appreciate it. And thanks for your patience doing all that and not even pushing the book. So let me give some extra promotion to the book. In Pursuit of Wealth, The Moral Case for Finance. I put up on Twitter, Slater Radio, a link to Free Market Revolution, How Ayn Rand's Ideas Can End Big Government. Please buy that book. And then their more recent one. And now Yaron's latest, In Pursuit of Wealth, The Moral Case for Finance. We'll break all that down. Coming up next. First, Rapid Transmissions. Rapid Transmissions is. They don't feel. they are. And they've been around for 43 years fixing your car. It's the largest independent transmission company in San Diego. It's a pretty simple business model. The dealerships, they make their money through repairs. So they're going to charge you more. Rapid Transmission makes their money by charging you less than the dealerships. and doing a better job. It's capitalism 101, do better for less money. And that's why they've been in business for 43 years and treating you right the whole time. Tell them you listen to the Mike Slater Show. Complete transmission service on most vehicles, $89.95. That's the sale going on now. It's about half off. So again, tell them you listen to the show. Oh, can't be combined with any other discount, but I mean, saving like $100 or so. Kearney Mesa, Escondido La Mesa, 1-800-562-7675. Call them up. Tell them you're coming by. 1-800-562-7675. RapidTransmissions.com. Jim Charbet's got headlines. What do we got, Jim? Hey, Slater Crusaders, Yaron Brook is here. He is from the Ayn Rand Center. Newest book, In Pursuit of Wealth, The Moral Case for Finance. Yaron, super glad you wrote this book. I know we've talked before about how no one understands how the financial world works, the financial markets work, and why they're good or moral, which is why they're so easy to vilify and blame all of our problems on. So why did you write it? What's the goal of this book?
Well, I wrote it partially out of a sense of justice. I mean, I'm a finance professor going way back, but I love business. I love progress. I love technology. I love living in a society in which we are relatively, you know, really absolutely, we're rich. We live a good life. And I think it's tragic that almost nobody understands why we're so rich, how we got here, and why this particular industry, this industry of finance, from bankers to venture capitalists to hedge funds to Wall Street, why they are so crucial and essential to being this successful and this rich. I mean, there is no society on the planet that has achieved success, material success, you know, maybe with the exception of the oil-rich countries in the Middle East, that does not have a well-developed rules respecting rule of law, financial system, you know, and a robust financial system. And without it, capitalism, it's not an accident the term capitalism is called capitalism. You know, without such a system, without a robust financial system, none of the wealth around us would be possible. And yet, and this is the great tragedy, forever, really forever, for 2,000 years at the very least, we have always condemned financiers, ridiculed them, and regulated them, controlled them, and gone after them as these villains. And to me, it's, to a large extent, just an act of justice to say, wait a minute, these people you consider villains are the people who make the world you live in possible. Without them, none of this would happen. None of this would exist. You know, so that's part of it, certainly is this issue of justice.
So I want to ask, time's limited, I want to ask, you know, why they're so easy to be vilified, but instead I'm going to skip forward and ask you to give us an example of what good it does. What good do these greedy bankers do and these hedge fund managers? How does that help me, person in San Diego, trying to make ends meet and put food on the table?
Well, the principle is that they allocate capital throughout the entire economy. So they make it possible for Steve Jobs to go from a garage to Apple to the success that exists today, whether it's through venture capital and the stock market and the bond market and all these markets. Hedge funds are entities that price assets, that pricing stocks, which determine how the capital gets allocated. So these are the guys who first see that the buggy industry is no good anymore because there's a industry in Detroit called automobiles, and they shift, in a sense, the capital from the buggies to the automobiles and make it possible for the automobile industry to happen. And they see that way before the managers in the industry see it or anybody else out there sees it. So they are responsible for making sure that we have commercial real estate projects where your studio is housed and where my office is, to our home mortgages, the ability of us to have our cash in a place where we don't have to worry about somebody stealing it. They make, really, if you look around, there is nothing that we touch, nothing that we engage in, no activity that we perform today in a modern society that is not made possible by the existence of financial markets and really by the existence of all of these different entities. Now, you could go over each one of them and describe exactly what they do, and to some extent we do that in the book. We explain what hedge funds do and what private equity does and what banks do and what investment banks do. But they're all part of this system that makes possible You know, think about how long it would take you to own a home if you didn't have a home mortgage. And the sophistication that is required for these entities to be able to give you a loan for 30 years and to be able to facilitate you being able to own a home and them being able to make a profit off of it. Because at the end of the day, all this could not exist without the profit motive. The profit motive is what integrates our entire society. It what makes possible all the goodies that we have out there. And that's another part of the book, is really an additional defense of a profit motive. That is kind of the theme of all my books. If you think about Free Market Revolution, Equal is Unfair, and this book, they're all integrated by this idea that profit is good and we should celebrate it and we should make it possible for people to achieve it.
Perfect. Can't wait to read it. Where do I get it? I don't see it on Amazon. Is that my own failing?
Yeah, no, it's we're doing this a few weeks too early, but it'll be up on Amazon sometime in mid-September. It's at the printers right now. They're running it. They haven't loaded it up to Amazon. It'll be available for actual purchase at the very end of September, but starting mid-September, you'll be able to pre-order it.
Okay, I'm happy about that because, first of all, that'll give everyone a chance to read Free Market Revolution and Equal is Unfair, right? So you can knock those two out as a good precursor.
Well, thank you.
And this gives me another excuse to invite you back on next month. Can we do that?
Absolutely. Anytime, Mike, you know.
Yaron, where should we send people to learn more about you and the Ayn Rand Center?
Well, it'd be great if people followed me on Twitter, Yaron Brook, YaronBrook, or Facebook, YBrook. They can put my name in any podcasting app and get some of those Blaze shows that I do and some other stuff. And of course, the Ayn Rand Institute, AYNRAND.org. There's just such a wealth of information up there.
Great to talk, Yaron. We'll do it again.
Anytime. Thanks,
Thank
Mike.
You, brother. Have an awesome day. Love you, Yaron. Love talking to you, Yaron. So I don't agree with Yaron. I agree on almost everything. But these two books are phenomenal. And they're made for you and me. That's the thing, too. I'm sure this third one is, too. I didn't get a chance to ask him. But it's not a finance textbook. This is made for you and me to understand and truly understand and then be able to share it and use it in discussions and debates with other friends and coworkers and colleagues. So these two are amazing, and I'm sure this third will be, too. So I put a link on Slater Radio to both of those books, his other books. I mean, he's written a ton, but there's two most recent. So please check those out and buy those. They are on the required reading list for the Mike Slater Show, these two right here.